No one's life, liberty, or property is safe while the legislature is in session. That means for all Americans, the state-level threat is upon us. We'll talk about it on this uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is Scott Cosenza, and I'm joined today by Caleb Taylor. And Caleb is the Director of Policy for the Virginia Institute of Public Policy, and he also has some other affiliations, which we're going to learn about as the program goes on. So welcome, Caleb.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
Yeah, you're welcome. So when I was a political science student, and back in the olden days, I was surprised to learn. I had a professor called Harry Basehart, and he was an expert in state and local politics. And he always stressed to us students that the power of spending and regulation at the state and local level, or actually at the state level, was at that point on a par with the federal level, or worse. And the federal spending has now kind of eclipsed state spending. In FY 2016, there was $3.87 trillion in federal budget spending, and the total state expenditures, I think, were not quite half that, but they are massive. And the level of regulation that occurs at the state level and the interaction with how people's lives are governed, whether they want to open a business or carry a gun or drive a car, these things are all massively impacted at the state level rather than at the federal level. And so much of what we do at LibertyNation.com and what we see in the media is about what happens at the federal level because it affects everyone equally. And I think that's a problem, and that's what I wanted to address in this podcast. And I am a subscriber and a supporter of the Virginia Institute for Public Policy, so let me put that out there. I believe they do an excellent job of sort of holding legislators and government's feet to the fire in my home state of Virginia. And there's another group that I also support and a proud supporter of, which is the Virginia Citizens Defense League, and they send out emails, as does VIPP or one of Caleb's other organizations that we'll talk about, Tertium Quids, that talk about what the legislature's up to and what we might do about it. So I wanted to use that as a launching pad to talk about the threats to liberty that we're now going to undergo as almost all the legislatures in the country start to sit and hear bills that are threatening to take our money and our property and so on. So that's why, Caleb, I invited you here. And so as we start, why don't you please tell us what are the various vehicles that you do use to influence policy, opinion, and legislation at the state level, and how do you use them, please?
Well, I think to start off, we need to kind of talk a little bit or expand a little bit on the difference between the Virginia Institute and Tertium Quids, or rather, more broadly, the difference between a 501c3 organization and a 501c4 organization.
And this is about tax regulations and also influence regulations. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. So Virginia Institute for Public Policy is a 501c3 organization. We are strictly an educational organization. We have several different audience subsections and everything, but generally the vehicles that we use as a C3 are research, messaging upon that research, getting down with the populace in general, and informing them of, you know, our findings or the findings of other organizations, and then just engaging in conversation. And that's for all intents and purposes, that's what it is. We do it a lot on social media. We do it a lot in person. We have events where we discuss policy in terms of economics or in terms of political science, and just talk about good policy, not necessarily what this bill does or what that bill does. We don't do any advocacy per se. Now, a 501c4 organization tends to be more advocacy. So their audience tends to be, or our audience, I guess, in Terps and Quids tends to be legislators or legislative staff. And so what we're trying to do is, in the same regard, we're trying to educate, but at the same time, we're trying to pay close attention to the language of of certain legislation, and you know,
and sound the alarm bell. As far that's my perspective from the consumer of this information. I want to know when my legislators are threatening me, and unfortunately, I do not have the ability to daily monitor these things, and so I have to farm out that. If eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, that vigilance can be outsourced a little bit in any case. And to me, that's what I see the value of your organizations as, is outsourcing my vigilance for my liberty. And I, when I noticed the legislature was about to to resume their session, I posted a Facebook posting, encouraging my friends to donate to your group or their own state level free market policy, or if we're not calling it policy, interest group, so that we can all keep their feet to the fire. So, can you tell me, do most states have a state level free market organization or organizations that are doing similar work?
Most of the states, I'm not sure that all of them do, but the vast majority of them have at least a small organization that does similar stuff. At the very least, it seems to me from what I've seen that on the liberty side of this conversation, we tend to have more 501c3s or an education organization rather than advocacy organizations. But a lot of times they'll be both. And they generally exist in every state. And a lot of times there's numerous ones. In the state of Virginia, there's quite a few organizations that do this type of work, which makes coalition building within the state very important.
Let's talk about that coalition building, and maybe we can do a little bit of issue talk here that might help things. What do you see in terms of Virginia? You know, you're looking ahead towards the legislative session. I guess a lot of bills have been introduced, but still many more to come before. Is it April that sine die is the conclusion of the legislative session? Anyway,
we're looking at about mid-March.
Mid-March, okay. If we're lucky, the sooner the better. There's a quote for people who don't know it that no man's life, liberty, or property are safe while the legislature is in session, and I think I agree with that for sure. So, what do you see? What's on the horizon that you're paying particular attention to, and that others should be as well?
Well, we tend to separate things into support and oppose on the Terps and Quids side. But as far as just direct policy, one of the things that we're worried about, obviously, is going to be Medicaid expansion. Medicaid expansion is a major issue within Virginia, especially considering this last election. Medicaid expansion is something that we've been standing against for many, many years now, and trying to continue to kind of hold the line there. That's probably the biggest issue right now in the state of Virginia.
Tell us sort of the stakes here, if you would. Now, this, I'm assuming this has something to do with the regulations commensurate with Obamacare, and the state's involvement in that. How does that work? I'm not playing ignorant to draw you out for the listeners. I actually don't know what we're talking about here. I admit to my own ignorance in this regard.
So what somebody means by Medicaid expansion is the expansion of eligibility to able-bodied adults under the guise of Medicaid insurance. Now, Medicaid was originally back in the mid-60s, 1965, actually. It was created to help people who were poor who could not afford insurance. Now, it wasn't a great plan back then. It caused all kinds of cost issues, dramatically increasing the cost across the board, not just for the poor, but for everybody, of health insurance and health care in general. And it caused another further issues that we could literally talk about for 6, 7, 8, 10 days. Mm-hmm. What this is now we've got some people that have fallen through the cracks with the ACA, given that the ACA did the exact same thing that Medicaid and Medicare did back in the 60s. It increased costs, as we've seen. It increased costs. It decreased availability of services, or at least it didn't increase them along with demand. And now we're having this problem where a lot of people are seemingly falling through the cracks, quote unquote. So what the Medicaid expansion is supposedly designed to do is to reach those people. However, all it is effectively is reinvesting in something that didn't work to begin with,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's something, you know.
And by investing, you mean taking money from Virginians and their pocketbooks and giving it to others. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. And it's not just that. It from you know, kind of a kind of metric standpoint, it also, anytime that you anytime you dedicate funding for one particular market,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to funding that can be used in any market, like the funding in your own pocketbook, you increase what you do is you devalue every dollar that's in that market. And that increased cost.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't just going to increase governmental spending on healthcare. It's going to increase costs across the board in Virginia, and we saw that with the original passage of Medicaid and Medicare back in the 60s, and we saw it with the ACA, and we've seen it with colleges. I mean,
mm-hmm.
every time something like this comes through, that's what occurs.
Are other states in 2018 also dealing with this issue? Do you see that elsewhere?
Oh yeah, quite a few. You know, Virginia had a tough, very tough fought election, and
it's a changing state, right? I mean, we're undergoing a metamorphosis here politically. Is that fair to say?
I guess that it is. I'm not sure that I saw that many. I mean, we've got a lot of. I think what we saw is we saw that the left side of the spectrum got very excited, and when one side of the spectrum gets excited, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing that
their people come out and they donate and they're active,
right.
And it's all that, and the other people are cowed and stay home and are inactive and suffer for that.
It's the exact same thing that happened during the Obama years,
mm-hmm.
But in the opposite direction. So nothing's too super surprising in terms of the switch. The how dramatic it was a bit on the surprising side, but that's just, you know, that's this how politics works.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we try to educate people as much as possible, because just because somebody's got a D or an R next to their name doesn't necessarily mean they're going to vote one particular way. You know, Tertium Court.
Sure, you're not a. I understand that. And it's probably important for people who maybe don't understand. You're not a Republican Party operative or a Democrat Party operative or a Libertarian okay. Party operative. You are for liberty. And for free market
for
economics.
And frankly, I would prefer that there wasn't the party system that we have.
Yeah, pox on all their on all their houses, right? Sure.
But like I said, I mean, in the past, not just from an education standpoint, from an advocacy standpoint, on the church and quiz, on the 501c4 side, you know, we've worked with Democrats to very great effect to affect changes in eminent domain legislation. We're currently working with what might be considered a traditionally progressive organizations like the ACLU to affect change in civil asset forfeiture, to reform that work. So this isn't a right or a left issue. It's a liberty issue and you form relationships based on issues, not necessarily based on we agree on everything, because nobody does.
Well, that's actually, I think, a good segue. So one of the first sort of where the rubber meets the road things that I encountered your group with is the Tuesday morning group. Can you tell people what the Tuesday morning group is?
Well, the Tuesday morning group is a coalition that formed, it would have been like 16, 17 years ago at this point.
And it was your father's invention, is that right?
Yes, it was. My father originally started it through the Virginia Institute. And what it essentially is it brought together groups from all over the state of Virginia, including some national organizations and including a bunch of individuals as well. Originally, it was maybe 16 organizations. Now overall, it has expanded to 250 different organizations with 1,000 different individual members. And we have monthly meetings. And essentially what we try to do is we try to make sure that information is flowing across the state.
Because nobody's perfect at recognizing these threats, where they're coming from. Correct. And so we need that. I think of it as like a coalition of the willing. It's sort of like, you know, do you want to pick up this fight? Well, here we, you know, let's all do it together.
Yeah. But oftentimes we found that there were, you know, we'd have one organization in the southwest corner of Virginia that was fighting their local government or the state on a particular issue. And then we'd find somebody in the Tidewater, Northern Virginia, that was doing the same thing. And they didn't know that each other, that they were having to deal with the same issue.
Right.
Once they had that kind of cross information, you know, building that coalition, that issue-based coalition between them would strengthen their position. And a lot of times lead to direct victory across the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Tuesday morning group has been really, really effective since its inception. One of our kind of crowning jewels we like to talk about is the Tuesday morning group and its affiliates were key to the constitutional amendment that effectively, you know, destroyed the previous eminent domain regime before 2012.
Okay, and, well, I want to talk about that in a moment, but before I do, do you happen to know, are there similarly situated coalition groups in other states as well? Is that a common thing that these groups do? And also, if you happen to know, is there an analogous group on the other side? Are there you know, sort of anti-liberty statist types who are meeting to try to, I don't know, take my guns and my money, I guess?
Well, of course, there are always coalitions like this outside of the state. I've seen I haven't seen very many that are as broadly based as TMG.
Mm-hmm.
TMG is very, you know, we have this set agreement that, hey, if you disagree on an issue, let's argue with each other, but at the end, let's shake hands and be civil about it. And so it's completely opposite of kind of today's media frenzied, you know, craziness.
Right.
I have seen quite a few issue-based coalitions that run all the way up the board, from national organizations all the way down to local organizations that have been forming in states all over the United States. And they've done a really good job of making really significant changes at the state level.
Well, let's talk a bit about that with respect to eminent domain, if we can. I think an issue-based discussion would be helpful for people to understand. And I see from this week's email from Tersham Quids regarding the Virginia legislature, the first item on that email for bills that you are supporting is an eminent domain bill. What's going on in the states with eminent domain? Eminent domain, for people who don't know, there was a huge case. It was Justice Souter, I think, who was the – I'm thinking now of the New Hampshire case. What is it? All right, I'm Paul.
Kelo.
Yes. Okay.
The Kelo case.
The Kelo case, yeah. Basically said that, and this was a bombshell, I think, around the world, around the United States anyway, that you could, that a government could simply take a person's land. So you own the back 40, you're growing farm and letting your dog romp around on it, and that's the way you like it. And some people in local government decide that they'd like to have your land for purposes of their own, such as making a shopping center or something else. And you say, well, no, I don't want to sell my land. And previously, the law had been, well, if it's for a bridge or a highway or something for the public use, then they have to pay you, quote unquote, fair market value for that land. But they're entitled to take it in a condemnation action. But this law, this ruling rather, changed all that because this town just wanted that land for their own economic development. They wanted a larger tax base. And so they just, you know, it would have been stealing if it wasn't legal, but according to Justice Souter, it was legal. And so they were able to take this person's land. So the thinking, I think, with a lot of people became, all right, well, now we have to fight this sort of on a state-by-state level because the federal law is so screwed up. So with that in mind, what's going on there and what are you trying to achieve there?
Well, the really interesting thing is that the Kelo case, I think it was New London. I'm not 100% sure, but
that's right.
The Kelo
case right.
Actually was the straw that broke the camel's back, but it wasn't the start. This actually started in the 1950s with a case whose name escapes me right this moment. And the core idea that was causing the problem was the difference between the definition of public use and the definition of public purpose. Public use was the government comes in, it offers fair market value, and it owns that property for usage. It owns that property outright. And then the public in general can use that property like for a park or take a run or a jog, whatever. Whereas public purpose included anything from tax revenues or anything like that.
Or blight. That's my favorite one is blight.
Yeah. The amusing thing was the Kelo's case was actually the public purpose was to build a Pfizer factory for the increased production of that little blue pill that most people can't.
Really? I didn't know Viagra had anything to do with it. Okay. There you go.
So
it continues to
what's even better is the factory was never built.
I am aware of that. I think that's awesome. That's some sweet justice there.
Yeah, but so the Kelo case really did break the camel's back in such that a lot of states, including Virginia, started pushing for constitutional amendments that eliminated the idea of public purpose condemnations as opposed to public use condemnations. And in 2012, we got that amendment. And since then, there have been a lot of legislation proposed to try to bring the Virginia Code up to date with that amendment. And that's what we see still coming through the legislature this year, and probably see more next year. It's a bunch of bills that are designed to just bring the Virginia Code up to date.
Do you think that as you look across sort of the national landscape, are many states currently engaged in eminent domain fights, or is that ground largely settled, or where are we nationally with that at the state level?
It varies dramatically. And one of the things that has kind of sparked up a lot of eminent domain conversations are the expansion of oil pipelines. And I think most of us would be completely okay with expanding pipelines because it increases our energy independence. And that's something that's really necessary for the United States. But when it comes to inappropriate use of eminent domain, that is where we have a problem. I want energy and independence, but not at the cost of private property rights.
Do you have a position, or any thoughts on? Is it the Keystone XL? Was that?
I don't necessarily have a particular on them. I was sort of speaking more to the pipeline that's currently has currently been proposed for the state of Virginia. But
what is your position on that?
I'm completely okay with a pipeline, as long as they are not inappropriately using or in a backhanded way using eminent domain to gain the property to do so. And
do you think,
you know, let me
ask you a question that may be easier for you to answer. What is an okay under your view that you think what either the law does provide, or maybe a better question is what the law should provide in terms of protections. What's the limit? Where is it? Can I build a bridge? Can I take somebody's land to build a bridge or a highway?
I think that's fine. It's how. It's a process by which how they do it.
I mean, can I do it with eminent domain? Are you okay with me going to some farmer and saying, yeah, I appreciate that you know, these 100 acres have been in your family for 1,000 years, but we need this land to make the new I-40 connector so that people can get home faster from work.
I would prefer not. Uh-huh. Okay. I would prefer not. But if we're going to have a conversation about, eminent domain is a part of the Constitution. So it is an allowed power. However, the important question isn't whether or not it should be done, but if it is to be done, how we should go about it. Mm-hmm. What is the process by doing so? And the way that, like, for instance, VDOT does it is exceedingly aggressive, doing everything they can to maximize their benefit and minimize their cost, or rather the benefit of the property owner. And it's inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. This is a struggle that I think so many liberty activists have gone through over the years, which is that the people want something and they don't want to pay for it. I can remember the case out of, I think it was North Carolina, where a guy had bought some beachfront lots and the mm-hmm. town changed the regulations so that you couldn't build on them. So he bought this land to build, vacation properties. And they said, well, you can't build. And then they argued that the reduction in value did not constitute a taking. And it's just breathtaking the level of theft they want to engage in. Instead of saying what would be true is, well, it's unfortunate that we have to take this land, but we do have to. And here's a fat check because, you're displaced now.
That's key, that quote unquote fat check. It needs to be the actual market value, and there's so many times that they do everything they can to mm-hmm. minimize.
Hey,
that
maybe with a little
value.
Padding thrown in, because you were ousted against your will. We're a little short on time here, so just before we wrap up, I want to ask, how can people support your efforts, and in their own states, what can they do to be more active as the legislatures are now in session, and they're certainly the bad actors are there with their pockets lined by dirty money, and they want to do the bidding of their masters. And how can we stop it?
Well, you cannot. Of course, you can always donate, which we always appreciate, and you can do that through our website, the virginiainstitute.org, or tertiumquids.org. If you want to be engaged, really get engaged in any local organization. That is the best way to be engaged in an organization, is getting engaged in the organization that's in your neighborhood. If there isn't one, start one. And if you have one, or even if you're an individual, contact the Virginia Institute. We will be happy to send you an invite to the Tuesday Morning Group Coalition meeting. Come and listen to see what's going on in the rest of the state, and see if you can get involved.
I can tell you, as somebody who has been to that meeting, I think it's time well spent for people who care about these issues. Okay, well, I think we're out of time. Anything else you feel compelled to add?
Just thanking you for having me today, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, and I encourage everyone to join me in supporting the Virginia Institute for Public Policy and Tertium Quids, and go out and find your own state-level group. Go to your Michigan. There's Mackinac. There's Goldwater in Arizona. Independence in Colorado. They're out there. Find them and support them, because it's time and money well spent for your precious liberty and your money. All right. With that, this has been The Uprising. Thanks again, Caleb, for LibertyNation.com. Bye-bye.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising, with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.